You guys hear me? Am I on? Good. All right. Well, we are truly excited to be here today. We've been introduced a couple of times, so I'm not going to reintroduce ourselves. You guys have met our boys. They came up here already. So we are happy and honored and blessed to be here today. We want to thank you guys for the partnership that we've had with you guys over the last 2 years. About 2 years ago, last summer, we were here speaking to you guys before we went overseas. And it's been a long 2 years, but we're back now a little earlier than expected, and we want to share some of what God's been doing in our lives and in Senegal. For those of you who don't know, we are serving with the Desert Springs team in northern Senegal, and we are working towards opening a vocational school for young men where I'll be teaching auto mechanics soon. And we are sent from Plymouth Alliance Church in Plymouth over by Sheboygan, and we are currently living in Wausau, so we're just your neighbors over here. This morning, I want to talk to you about unfinished. That's the theme for the Alliance Missions Conference this year. Our text this morning is going to come from the book of Acts, chapters 14 and 15. At the end of chapter 14, we find Paul and Barnabas returning to the church that sent them after finishing their first missionary journey. We see these sent ones coming back to their fellowship that sent them out. And this group of people is eager to hear their reports. What exactly was said isn't recorded for us, but we can imagine that they probably reported on the difficulties and some of the events that happened earlier in chapter 14. At the beginning of that chapter, we see Paul and Barnabas had been preaching the gospel to the unbelieving Jews and the Greeks. And people were coming to Christ. In Acts 14:1, it says,
"At Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went as usual into the Jewish synagogue. There they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Greeks believed."
But doesn't it sometimes seem like every time things are going well, something bad happens? And that's the case for Paul and Barnabas. In Acts 14:2, we begin to read about it. Then after moving to a new location, God moved in miraculous ways through Paul and Barnabas. Acts 14, verse 8. But then again, we're continuing the cycle. Paul and Barnabas face considerable conflict again in verses 19 and 20. Now, being stoned, I'd call that considerable conflict. I'm glad that we're not here today reporting a similar story. But like Paul and Barnabas, we're back among our sending churches this year, and we're reporting the way God has been faithful to us in the last couple of years and the ways, some of the difficulties that we've been through. We know that God's not finished with our story. We invite Him into our unfinished story, even as we report to you about the journey that we've had these past 2 years. I'd like Elizabeth to give a summary of our last 2 years. For those of you who haven't been following our journey, it's just a little bit about what we've been doing these last 2 years.
Friends there, and we had a lot of great time spent the first couple of weeks in our country getting to know the church family, getting to know our community, figuring out where we go shopping. We spent our first month in our teammates' house. Our teammates were in the U.S. for home assignment, and so we were able to spend them in their house while we were looking for our own place to live. About 6 weeks into our stay in Senegal, we went on a team retreat, a prayer retreat with all of our team members, and that was just a really sweet time for all of us just to be together, to get to know one another. We had met some of the teammates, but not all of them previously, and so we just spent a lot of time dedicating the coming year to God, asking what He might have for us as a team and the ways we might minister in the country. On the way home from that retreat, our family, the four of us, along with two of our teammates, traveled to the capital city. We needed to make a stop there for a couple of days before we headed home. The other vehicle, driven by our team leader and his family, along with two of our other single members of our team, went directly back to our home city. About an hour from reaching their destination, they were on what we call a beach road, that's quite hilly. And as they came over the top of a hill, directly in their lane, coming straight at them with a motorcyclist, there was no time to react. The motorcyclist struck the front of our teammate's vehicle head-on and was killed instantly. That event brought on a series of events for everyone on our team. The trauma that those in the vehicle faced was quite significant. There were three children in the car. Miraculously, God protected their hearts and their minds from seeing and remembering very much of the gruesome accident. Unfortunately, the adults in the car were facing some pretty severe trauma trying to process what was happening and what had happened. Our team leader, because he was the driver of the vehicle, faced charges of possible jail time, actually 2 months or more, is required by Senegalese law for anyone who is the driver of a fatal accident, whether or not it's your fault. Everyone on the scene reported it was not his fault. There was nothing he could do. He responded correctly that Senegalese law would require him to go to jail. There was a member of the community that was able to help our team leader go home directly after the accident and not face jail time, which was really just a miracle in and of itself. But over the next couple of weeks, he had to show up at different trials. He had to contact lawyers, both Senegalese lawyers and different lawyers that we knew in West Africa that might be able to help us find some sort of way to keep him out of serving in jail time. Needless to say, our team leader, his wife, and their family were dealing with a number of things while we were very new in the country. They needed to take time to process and to go through the legal system. We could not be very much help in any of those things because just supporting them and being there for them. The other two members of the team who were in the accident, one of them was a young lady who is our boys' school teacher. And the accident for her was extremely traumatic. And after about a month and a half after the accident, she needed to go home to the U.S. to receive better care and just support from her family. So that left our team in a little bit of a tricky situation, having five children that needed to go to school each day. And so I stepped in for a couple of days when that announcement was made, but we were trying to think of who could come and teach our kids. We didn't know how long our teacher would be gone, but at least a month or two. And I had this idea, actually, in the middle of the night, that maybe my parents could come. My parents are retired, and I thought, well, you know, they thought about
So on Friday afternoon, in the beginning of April,
the government, the USMC announced that they were going to have another repatriation flight the following week. And we got an email that if you want to be on this flight, your tickets are provided. So we looked into it and we asked that if you all provide travel, something that will allow us to travel between the regions. And they said, no, unfortunately, we can't provide any of the time on your own. And well, we are 4 hours away from the airport and there are multiple police checkpoints along the way. We thought, well, maybe we could bribe them, if we really needed to get by, but even that I strongly discouraged in the country of Senegal. We really didn't know how we would be able to travel. So Steve and our teammate again went to the government office and they said, not yet. Afterwards, after Simon's surgery, we decided to do a same year. We had to start being probably, things are really confusing. We felt like we were in this big fog. We're going to start to speak to churches. And a lot of ways, we know what we're going to say to you. We haven't been in the country that long. 9 months is not that much to be able to say, we're doing all of these things. We're involved in all of this. Our language is great. We can't really say any of that. The truth is, we haven't really done that much. We've been trying to survive this last year, especially. As part of our home assignment, all of us need to have medical examinations and be cleared for service for the following year. And in those medical appointments, it was discovered back over the summer that several of us had some underlying health issues. Now, some of those have been cleared, but for some of us, they have not. And so there again, I can just say thank you, God. Thank you for bringing us back. Thank you for showing us some of what's going on. And we're just really thankful that we have this year to continue to explore the medical problems that some of us are experiencing. And just praying that God will heal in the course of this year.
As we reflect back on what Elizabeth has just shared, it's kind of hard for us to put it all together and look what we've been through. But we're very thankful for the report in Acts 14 that details the highs, the lows, the highs, the lows that Paul and Barnabas went through. We know that the enemy meant this division in the church, the stoning of Paul, for evil. But we also know that their story wasn't done yet. God was still working. He was giving them the strength to carry on. We saw in these hard times the opposition that they saw, but then we saw the lame beginning to walk again, and we saw Gentiles coming to know Christ. For us, that's an encouragement. We know in this season, when we've seen a very difficult year, that God is still working. We know that I know that He's not finished with me. He's not finished with our family. And we want you guys to know that God's not finished with you. We invite Him into our unfinished journeys, and you invite Him into yours. And as you do that, He begins to mold us to be more like His Son. We get to see the world through Christ's eyes, and we get to grow in our love and knowledge an understanding of who He is. He loves us, and He wants to see the world brought to Him. There's other people in your life, like your coworkers, a relative, a neighbor, who God may be calling you to engage in on a deeper level. These are the stories, your unfinished stories, that God wants to complete in you. There's other stories that come from people like us, stories about people with no gospel access, stories of people that you may not ever have a chance to interact with, but these are God's unfinished stories. In Acts 15, the Phoenician and Samarian churches were also on Paul and Barnabas' speaking tour, much like we are today. Their reaction speaks of the mission motivation of hearing reports of these unfinished stories. The news made the believers glad. We hope that the news that we're bringing back makes you guys glad. We want you to see that the sacrifices of both us as the sent and you guys as the senders is worth it. We hope that the stories we share bring joy to your hearts, and that because of these stories, you will praise God with us. In northern Senegal, there are about 5.6 million people that make up the Wolof. They are 40% of Senegal, and they are an unreached people group. According to the Joshua Tree Project, it is 0.01% Christian per every person. That's 1 in 10,000. If you were to go outside today and find a neglected lawn and start picking three-leaf clovers, statistics say you'd have to pick 10,000 of them before you'd run across a four-leaf clover. Think about that for a minute. If you're a seeker in Senegal and you want to find out more about this God that you've heard of, you would have to knock on 10,000 doors before you would find somebody, another Wolof person, that could tell you about Christ. We are a church planting team. We are partnered with a local church. We've spoken to many of you this past week about some of that. But we are there to proclaim the good news of Christ. And to that end, we have several ministries. Most of these ministries are based on relationship building. If you've heard some of our other stories, you'll know how important relationships are in Senegal. We have a prison ministry. We have a ministry just to neighborhood kids called a kids club. We have a ministry to street boys. These are boys who are given to religious leaders as a tithe. They are expected to beg on the street for most of the day and earn money for the religious leader, as well as their own food and cooking oil so that they can eat at night. We have health clinics where we do vaccinations. We help with malaria and yellow fever. We have classes for to help with diabetes and other major diseases that we have in Senegal. And we have a school for young women that teaches cooking and fabric arts. And soon we hope to have a mechanic school that is coming alongside for the young men. Speaking of those relationships, I want to tell you a little story about my landlord, our landlord. We're going to call him Mamadou. If you go to Senegal and you meet somebody, there's about 25% chance his name is going to be Mamadou or Mohammed. So we're going to go with Mamadou because it works well. Mamadou is a new relationship for our team. Our team did not know him before we started renting from him. And that's a pretty big deal. As you listen to the story, I'll explain why. But before I start telling Mamadou's story, I want to give a little bit of cultural background for those that haven't been with us all week. In Senegal, we are all about relationships. Time is not important in the same way that it's important here. We don't set out to get tasks done. In Senegal, it's all about spending time with people. If a guest comes unannounced, it's expected that you'll spend around 45 minutes to 2 hours with this guest. You'll sit around, and if it's mealtime, you'll share a meal. Even if they're too poor to share a meal, there is always food to be shared. If it's not near mealtime, you may share a cup of tea. I believe the picture here shows a man pouring tea. The tea is a very, very sweet and highly caffeinated tea. It's usually three different seepings of the same leaves, so the strength of the tea changes. It gets less bitter and more sweet throughout the time that you drink it, which is an analogy for a relationship in Senegal. It starts out kind of difficult to take, but as you spend more and more time, it gets sweeter and easier. There are social clues for ending a meeting like this early, but for the most part, if you show up to somebody's house, you are expected to stay as their guest for as long as you would like. Our landlord, Mamadou, was really excited to get to know this American neighbor that's living near to him. He's invited me over countless times for sharing meals, for sharing tea, for just opportunities to chat and practice language. Unfortunately, this older man, Mamadou, is missing most of his teeth, and I find him very, very difficult to understand in French or Wolof. And even our team leader, who's been in the country for over 10 years now, says, "Oh, Mamadou, that guy's hard to understand." So I've had to decline some of his language teaching opportunities just because I'm right now getting about 60% of what he's saying. But I very enjoyed the conversations I've had with him as he's tried to understand what this American is doing in his country, learning his language. We've had some of the early conversations that I've had with him. I sat down with his family for lunch to share a common plate. And he started talking about polygamy. You know, polygamy is very prevalent in Senegal. And he wanted me to back him on some of his polygamistic views as we sat there with one of his wives. As we got into the conversation, it became very clear that I wasn't going to support him on his polygamy views. And his wife got very animated. She was excited that I was standing up against polygamy. The conversation got kind of closed down pretty quickly after that. But a seed was planted. And the Lord allowed me to continue that relationship, even though culturally I may have just done something that should close down that relationship. As an elder, I shouldn't have spoken against what he was saying. As we move forward a little bit in time, we've now left the country, and our team leader is continuing that relationship for us. He goes over to our house one evening to speak to our guard, and it comes to their attention that they need to go over and speak to Mamadou, the landlord. So they go over to his house. It's about a block and a half away. And they start just a casual conversation like you would in any relationship in Senegal. About an hour and a half into the conversation, it's about 10 o'clock at night now. Mamadou starts bringing up questions about religion. He explains that he's starting to have some doubts about what his religious leader is saying, that it doesn't seem like this man is practicing what he's preaching, essentially. This is a really, really big deal for a Muslim man to be saying this, especially so early in our relationship. It's admitting a fallibility or a failure in his religion that normally would not happen at this point. Our team leader was able to explain to him that we do not follow a man. We follow Jesus. And Jesus is without sin. He's without failure. Another neat thing about this story was that our guard, who is a younger Senegalese man and a very devout Muslim, had to sit through this whole conversation and listen. It would have been very disrespectful for him to get up in the middle of the conversation and say, you know what, I don't want to hear this. I'm going to go back and do my guard duty. As he sat there and listened to two elders speak, he had to be respectful and stay there for the whole time. And so in an opportunity, God used one man in a very culturally inappropriate way to hopefully evangelize another man. We don't know the rest of the story. We know God's not done. We know that this is an unfinished story. We are praying for other opportunities to see Christ's love shown to this man, Mamadou. We hope that as we get back into the country, we can continue this relationship and have other opportunities to share with him as our language capability gets better.
And those girls are going to drop out of school around the world, right? They tend to be illiterate and
As Elizabeth just said, we know that God's not finished reaching the Wolof people. Acts 15:36 shows us Paul wanting to revisit the people that he had visited on his first missionary journey. He wants to see what God is doing in their lives. In the same way, we are anxious to get back to Senegal to see what God is continuing to do. We are anxious to see what he's doing in the life of our landlord, in the life of our friends that we've made, the ladies that work for us and the church members, but also in this girls' school. We know that God's mission is not yet finished. The Great Commission remains and will remain until all have the opportunity to hear and to respond to his invitation. By conservative numbers, there's about 4,000 groups of unreached or unengaged people, which include the Wolof. We each need to do our own part to reach these people, to share with them this free gift that we have received so that they can respond. In Acts 15, 9 and 11, it says, "He, Jesus, did not discriminate between us and them, for he purified their hearts by faith. We believe it is through the grace of our Lord Jesus that we are saved, just as they are." So you know that God has invited you to join in this unfinished story, but how? How can you do this? I want you guys to imagine back to Great Britain 1939. For those that aren't history buffs like me, we're talking World War II. The country is on the brink of being involved in this great war. You're sitting there in your home, and you're watching the fighting, listening to it on the radio. You know that just across the English Channel, the French line is holding back the Nazis. And you know that if this line gets broken, there's just this little strip of water that's keeping the Nazis out of your country. As you're watching this, you devote yourself to prayer. You pray for the men on the front line. You pray for the decision makers. You pray against the evil that you see in the Nazis that is coming to your country. You pray daily and you pray fervently. You're watching around you and you're thinking, what can I do to help this war effort? Maybe you sell off some things. You see your neighbors volunteer. You see your friends and you see your family get drafted. Perhaps for some reason you can't go and fight yourself, but you figure out what you can do to support the war effort. Many women were making jellies and whatnot that they could send to the front line. People were collecting discarded metal and sending it off for recycling. Anything that they could do to get extra resources to the front line. I hope you've made the connection. I'm going to put it together for you just in case, but I'm sure you have, that World War II was a war of survival of peoples and nations. Right now, we are in a war as well. We are in a war for eternal souls of the earth. Just like those people, just like you may have sat back, if you pictured yourself there, and listened to the radio every day to hear about the progress of the Nazis or the pushing back of them, or listen at the end of the day for the report of the dead. You did everything you could to help the war effort. Are we doing the same thing today? Are we listening to the report from the front line? Are we reading the stories from the missionaries? Are we sending whatever resources we can? As we were in training to go overseas, we read an article as part of our required training that spoke about wartime lifestyles and attitudes towards missions. There hasn't been a war like World War II since, and we're all very thankful for that. But I hope that we're not forgetting what war looks like and what it requires of the people back home. I hope that we're still fighting in missions like it's a war. When will God's unfinished work be finished? When will this war be over? When can we stop fighting and lay down our arms? Jesus answers that question in Matthew 24:14. It says, "And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end time will come." So the work of the church, your work, my work, it'll all be finished when Jesus Christ comes back. Do you want to see the return of Christ? Do you want to see the end of the age of the world? I know I do. You can help make this happen. Your effort will bring back Christ. When the war is over, Christ will return. I want to share with you three practical ways that you can get involved in this unfinished work and help speed the return of Christ. First, God's people will pray. Pray that the nations will hear. Pray that they'll know the love of the sacrifice of Jesus. Pray for the missionaries that you know, people like our family, other missionaries that may have been sent from this church, but also pray for the missionaries you don't know. Pray for the church back home. Pray that they'll continue to give, that they'll feel compelled to support missions overseas. God's people can give. How can you support the Great Commission effort? I want to explain to you that no amount is too small for God. I believe up here you should see a picture. No, apologize for that. There it is. All right, we've got $5 and 5 pair of sandals. What's that mean? $5 can go out and buy 5 pair of sandals. We've talked about the Talibé kids, these kids that have been given, we call them street boys as well. They don't have much of anything. They're forced to go out and beg every day. We can give 5 pairs of sandals to 5 kids for $5. In the course of a year, that's 60 kids that have shoes on their feet. So they're not getting their feet cut up from trash that is in the roads. If you watch some of our pictures in the back after the service, you'll see how dirty the country of Senegal can be. These kids are running around all day long without shoes, and they get a lot of wounds. Those wounds get infected. And we are showing the love of Christ to these kids in a way that nobody else is in the country. And we are praying that as these kids see what the missionaries are doing for them, that someday they'll come back and say, the only people that loved me when I was a poor begging kid were the missionaries. In the same way, moving up a little bit higher, a fast food meal here in the U.S. for a family of four might cost $40. If you go to Culver's after church, I expect you're going to spend around that for a family of four. That same $40 will buy a meal for 20 of those kids. They get the protein that they usually don't get. They get vegetables that they're not used to having. They get a nutritious warm meal rather than just rice. For $100, we can give vaccination to those same 20 kids. Our Talibé program maintains vaccination records for kids, and we can keep them vaccinated against some very serious diseases in Senegal, such as yellow fever. A little bit higher up, not shown on my picture up there, every year our team gives out calendars to local business people and to friends of the church. These calendars have verses written on them in French, in Wolof, and in Wolof in Arabic script. We have business people asking us every year, Muslim business people asking us, when are your calendars coming out? We're looking forward to your calendar. About 300 of these calendars are given out every year in our area. Those calendars cost us about $400, so $33 a month can allow us to keep giving these calendars out every year. The alliance structure is changing. In the coming year, you'll hear about how giving is changing in the alliance, but the message is still the same, that all gifts are welcome in all ways. The alliance wants to encourage you to find a worker that you love and support them. We want you to find a work that you love and support it. We're not up here today asking you to support the Williams family. We're up here today asking you to support missions, the alliance missions specifically. Find a work that you love and support it. To that end, I want to talk a little bit more about the boys' school. It's near and dear to me, as I'll be teaching there. You should see a picture there. That is our building as it was inaugurated about 5 years ago. It just sat mostly empty, except for some use we get from the Talibé Day, the street boys. We are hoping to reopen the school here in the coming years, and we are looking for people who want to support this mission. We have a very good example of what this school can do as we look at the young women's school, seeing 100 women go through this program and be able to openly explain that they understand the gospel story. We'd ask that you would consider supporting that mission as it starts up. And finally, God's people can go. At a men's breakfast that I had to speak at recently, I came up with a mnemonic to help remember where we can go. And I know it's a little bit cheesy. I came out of the business world, so we're gonna propagate that a little bit. But it comes from Acts 1:8, and I hope you guys all know that verse. It is the Alliance theme verse. I want to challenge each one of you to go here, go near, and go to the obscure. Now, the obscure is just an obscure word, right, for far away, something unknown. God might not be calling you to Africa. God is calling all of you, though, here. There are people in your neighborhood, like I mentioned before, your coworkers, the lady in the checkout lane at the cash register, the people in your neighborhood that God is asking you to talk to, the people that need to hear the gospel story. If we look at the near, we're talking in the U.S. It's still comfortable. We're still speaking the same language. There are Envision sites in Atlanta, in Minneapolis, as near as Chicago. Actually, now I was speaking in Kiel last week, and Chicago's probably nearer for them. So we're going to say as near as Minneapolis for you guys to go, and you can donate some time and get involved in missions locally. But then I want to push you to the obscure. Maybe God's calling you to overseas work. We need workers in Europe, like I said earlier this morning. Europe is one of the biggest new mission fields. We need workers in Taiwan, in Japan, but maybe even Africa. Maybe God's calling you to Africa. If you come back to the table after church, we have a flyer that we can give you. On it explains ways that you can get involved. The website is called toserve.org for the Alliance. On that flyer, it explains to you that we are looking for high school graduates. People that are maybe, if you're looking for something to do between college, you're not quite ready for college yet. These Envision sites in the U.S. and across the world are open for high school graduates to come to spend 6 months up to 2 years getting to know missions, maybe finding out if God is calling you into that. We're looking for your standard, what we would call stereotypical missionaries, preachers and pastors, church planners. But we're looking a lot these days for blue and white-collared workers, people that can come fill a role like we're filling, going to countries that missionaries aren't typically allowed, countries that are closed to the gospel, to be teachers, to be auto mechanics, to be working with kids on soccer camps, to running workout centers for young women. There's all kinds of opportunities all over the world. And finally, I want to speak to the retired people that are here today. God is calling you to missions still. Your job is not done either. There are plenty of opportunities to teach missionary children or to get involved in Envision sites as well and spend some of your retirement serving the Lord overseas. So as we spend this time in missions emphasis this week, we've really enjoyed getting to know you guys and really pushing this idea of going. I expect that Jesus is asking you, how will you join him today? Is he whispering into each one of you different questions? Maybe he's whispering to you, will I do what he asks of me? Will I join in the finishing? Will I give sacrificially? Will I be a prayer warrior? Will I minister to the locals around me who don't know the gospel? Will I go and serve? Will I let God use me? Today, let God do unfinished work in your heart. Let him stir you to join him on this unfinished mission. We must be people who are going deeper with Jesus, even if you're already involved. I believe that the Holy Spirit is calling you to go into a deeper relationship with him.
Thank you very much for being with us. Let's thank our guests. All this effort, all this moving around.